This is episode 433. Did you know I'm having a baby? It's true, with a chocolate-dipped goddess named Yali. And on this episode, we do a life update because this pregnancy has been really hard on the both of us. And so in this conversation, we talk about a bunch of stuff. Yali's health situation, why we don't think the hospital system does right by pregnant and birthing mothers, which leads us into explaining why we chose to do a home birth. Bit controversial. We also do some unpacking about cultural challenges within our broader family dynamic and how some of this journey has actually healed some family trauma. Plus, my own fears about being a freaking terrible parent. And if you make it right to the end of the video, great news, you get to see the baby bump. So that's pretty cool. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends?
Yali is the new introducer, conductor, person that brings us live on air to the podcast.
This one's on behalf of Carabello.
So as you know, it's my mission to coach 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And we do it without calorie counting, embarrassing weigh-ins, or a forbidden food list. And by real weight loss, I mean we go so much deeper than just burning body fat so that you can finally stop self-sabotaging and so you don't end up overweight again in just a few months' time. So if that sounds like what you're after, then the link to inquire about what we do is down in the caption below or the show notes below. So scroll down, click the link, come and say g'day, and we'll figure out if we can support you or not. So yeah, anyway, we're here for a pregnancy update because we've recently been going to a few different parties and gatherings and running into friends and people in our broader network, including clients that are like, oh, Yali, are you still so incredibly unwell and worried about you? And for anyone that's tuning in for the first time or didn't even know we were having a baby, we're having a baby. But go back after you finished here, or maybe start there. Episode 400, we announced to the world that we were having a baby. And there was a lot in that podcast episode, but because we're surrounded by so many amazing, caring humans that have been checking in and asking what's going on, we thought, oh, we really should do an update because thousands of people are obviously waiting, sitting on edge to understand what's going on in our lives.
Oh no, but it was so sweet because I didn't realize how many people had listened to the podcast and that they had no updates since then and thought that I was still really, really sick. Because if you listen to episode 400, you'll know that I had hypermesis gravidarum. I was in and out of hospital. I couldn't eat. I couldn't drink. It wasn't looking great. So I am much better now.
Yay!
Much to Maddie's relief.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that probably lasted 4 months.
Yeah. About four months. And then there was probably another month of you sort of transitioning back to normality, whatever normality is for a pregnant person.
It didn't change overnight. But, yes, I can drink water. I can eat. Yay. I'm eating meat again as well, which Maddie's really relieved about because.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I honestly did not think that was going to be possible at the start of this journey when we had this amazing nutrition book and it talked about the diet and the nutritional needs of the baby. And I thought, there is no way even half of that food is going to get into my body in this state. So really, really nice to be able to enjoy food again.
Yes. Yeah, I was, as we kind of touched on in the first episode 400, and a lot of people reached out and said that they were really, I guess, inspired or admiring us for how honest we were about our relationship challenges that came as a result of that situation. Because, yeah, me being the nutritionist and the guy that feels like he has all the answers to everybody's problems, otherwise this podcast wouldn't exist, it was a struggle for me to be able to not be able to provide all of the things that I could bring and provide and nutrition, and then, you know, seeing you vomit everything up and then worry that everybody was dying and or going to die in childbirth and disabled children and all of the things that ran through my head. And it's been challenging to let go of that, even though things have been improving, which they have a lot, to the point that, as you said, you're eating meat. And for those listening who know that Yali had 8 years of vegetarianism, she's now been, for most of the last few months, in a situation where if she doesn't have protein or animal protein, she feels sick. So that's an interesting development.
Yeah, which is wild because I've gotten better, and yet the strange thing is I don't feel a significant level of hunger. So I don't tend to eat because, oh my gosh, I'm ravenous and I'm pregnant and I have this baby. And it's more that I have to tell myself to eat. And we joked about how I was worried, am I eating enough? Is my belly growing enough? You know, am I gaining enough weight? And so the strange thing is instead of hunger, I feel nausea, which is not, which is something I would have loved to have left behind with the hyperemesis gravidarum. But if it's too long between meals, I feel nauseous. And if it's a meal without enough protein, I feel nauseous. And so, yeah, having meat is really the only way I can overcome that.
Yeah, which I'm fine with because I eat plenty of meat and, you know, that's good.
Yeah, this is the guy who eats steak for breakfast.
Steak, mince, ground beef, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I just cooked up 2 kilos of it yesterday. I love it.
We had open burrito bowls yesterday after, like, well, for breakfast, really. I had a fruit bowl and then finished it off with that. Yeah,
whilst the midwife was here. So it was like, we're building this baby with amino acids, we promise. But speaking of the nutrition stuff, you and I have been obviously on this journey together, but iron, despite all of the meat that you've been eating and that transformation from vomiting 3 or 4 times a day to now eating 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day, your iron continued to go lower and lower and lower. And you tell that story.
Yeah. So that was really frustrating, especially because at the start with my history of vegetarianism, my iron was already low. So before we actually got pregnant, we talked about preparing our bodies to get pregnant. And Maddie's like, you know, I'm not controlling, but, you know, would you ever consider eating meat again? Because that can be a risk or a factor in the attempt to get pregnant. So, you know, it took me a while and I thought about it and I was ready to actually go down that path and reintroduce meat into my life. But my iron was already low. And then we got pregnant straight away.
Oops.
So the idea of preparing our bodies kind of went out the window. This baby had other ideas. But when I got blood tests, because my iron was so low, what was really frustrating is every time we went to natural health practitioners and even the midwife at the hospital, the first thing they said when they looked at my bloods was that I needed an iron infusion. And, you know, especially because I was pregnant at this point. And the midwife said, you need an iron infusion, but then quickly followed it up with, but the hospital won't give you one because the hospital has 2 markers, one for ferritin, which is your iron stores, and one for hemoglobin, so the amount of iron that's actually in your blood. And both of those have to be below the marker for the normal range. And even though one of them was unbelievably low and the other one was only borderline normal, no one would give me an iron infusion. My doctor refused to give me one and kept talking about the risks and how, you know, dangerous it could be and staining and anaphylaxis and, oh, we don't want to put the baby at risk. And so we spent maybe, 7 months trying to fight for me to get an infusion where no one would write the referral. And the only result was everyone had to wait for it to get worse and worse. And so it wasn't until it plummeted to a seriously critical levels that the midwife went, oh, yeah, we need to get you an iron infusion. And this, again, is the hospital system, which, you know, every alternative or natural health practitioner we went to, it was the first thing they said, you know, you need this support, you need these supplements, you need this infusion. And the medical system just wouldn't give it to me until it was ultimately very, very critical and dangerous for giving birth. And the thing that really infuriated me through this process, beyond wanting to fight to be seen as an individual, because the only rationale they would give me for not giving me the infusion was that, oh no, based on these levels, you can take supplements. And so because you can supplement, it's not a priority, even though they knew that I couldn't take the supplements because I threw everything up.
Yeah.
So one, I was never seen as an individual. It was just another statistic given the same routine response that everyone else received. And so I became invisible in that conversation because the fact that I couldn't take the supplements became really just not a factor. And then in addition to that, there was no separate statistic for a pregnant woman when the data shows that the levels of iron that you need to create another life and another blood supply and a heart is significantly more. And so I couldn't believe that I was being treated as though I wasn't pregnant and that my needs were greater. It was just, nah, this is the line in the sand and we're not going to look at you or do anything about it until you meet our standards.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that, yeah, a normal woman, and by normal, I mean a woman that's not pregnant, not having a child, and yeah, somebody like you just described, building a blood supply, building a heart, building an entire human being. How are those markers even remotely the same? Like, the demand for iron is obviously significantly greater, which is simply, I think, I mean, anecdotally proven by the fact that you went to eating meat multiple times a day and the numbers still went down.
Yeah.
Why? Because that's all going to the baby, plus your stores, right? It's not just sort of evaporating into thin air. I mean, there's argument for an absorption issue there, but yeah, it's just crazy. It's like, how can those, you know, criteria for be the same for an iron infusion?
Yeah. Oh, and also this is in addition to Maddie spiking my food. So because
which we don't know if it happened or didn't happen. I don't know. Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't.
Yeah. My vitamin D went up, but that wasn't a miracle. So
can you just clarify what that is? Yeah.
So because I couldn't take supplements with the hypermesis gravidarum and I felt deeply traumatized by all of the vomiting and the smells of the supplements, just the process of putting a supplement in my mouth was enough to make me vomit. Even it got to my gag reflex was so bad that it got to the point that I couldn't even brush my teeth. So there were many nights where I try and brush my teeth and then Maddie would hear me gagging and I'd try and keep it down, come to the bedroom, and then I'd have to go back because I would just throw up. And so I said, because I cannot take the supplements and my psychology was affected to the point that I'm like, I can't even get my head around it. The idea of me trying to take it is bad. The idea that putting it in food, I just can't handle it. Can you make things and spike my food? I'm like, can you just drug me without me knowing? Like, you have my explicit, you have my permission. And poor Maddie, because it's gone, you know, I was thinking about this. I just didn't think it would be okay to do it without your permission because I didn't want to get in trouble. And I'm like, and there was no way for me to get around it because ideally I would have loved it if you did it without me having to say it. Because the problem was that every time you gave me something or the banana smoothies, part of me would go, oh, is there something in here? And then I'd, you know, I'd start to worry. But no, it was great because I didn't even know how many things you got it into. Mm. Because then when my blood results came back and my vitamin D had gone up and you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Well, the thing for me and for those that have listened to episode 400, there'll be a bit more context that they understand. And if you haven't been there, check it out. By the way, if you want to see our beautiful faces, we're on YouTube. and we've also got Ollie here with us on the couch, who's adorable. But the thing I was going to say is the whole thing that I didn't want to get in trouble was because we'd been through a challenging time in our relationship with what was going on with all of that then, that I thought if you then discovered that I was sneaking in these things to your food, and that you would be really angry.
Yeah, fair enough. And it's a really tricky position to be in because it's, should I or shouldn't I spike my partner's food? And this isn't to drug her, but this is to give her the vitamins and minerals and nutrients that she needs so that she survives and the baby is healthy. So the point was, even then, Maddie was trying to put iron supplements into my food. So with the iron supplements, with me then eating meat 2-3 times a day, my iron levels still plummeted.
Yeah, but, you know, any of that spiking that may or may not have happened was also also not very consistent.
Yeah.
So hard to rely on that as a source of nutrition.
Oh, absolutely. It's more just that it was a contributing factor.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it might not have been consistent, but I was still eating meat. And even with any addition of the supplements, nothing was enough to actually get my iron levels stabilized. Because I'm growing a human who needs more iron.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but I guess now though, we had all three scans, you know, in the early part. And for the most part, it seems like things are going well and you're healthy and all of the checks and all of the midwife stuff is amazing. And literally last night, we saw Caramello try to exit, not through the exit, Like, but the like coming out of the stomach, it was like your whole body, like your whole stomach contorted because it was like, we're going out this way.
Oh, that was wild because it was only on one half of my stomach and it's like it had pushed its legs against one half of my uterus and then the back just emerged from my stomach and it was quite uncomfortable, but it looked wild.
It was so surreal.
Yeah, yeah, because you just see this body just merging out of my stomach. It was
because it wasn't just like a little bump that we've seen heaps of those, but yeah. It was like fully your whole stomach just changed shape because it was like being contorted by this one point of pressure. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And it happened like 3 times.
Yeah.
And the expression on your face was basically like, what the fuck is happening to me right now? And I'm over here just being like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wild experience because even though intellectually, you know, there's a baby inside of you, it's really something else to see it trying to come out and pop out of my stomach. And I'm like, it's not time yet. We can relax.
Well, we watched a video just before and I've heard of this from friends as well that once the baby's born and whatever, like women miss that, that like the baby inside them and feeling that and that's something that they long for.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've had this feeling for so long, right, that the moment it's gone, you're mourning the loss of something because I'm used to feeling the baby move inside of me now. And even though sometimes it can be a bit uncomfortable, it's almost become a part of me.
Yeah.
And so, I can completely empathize with the feeling that once the baby's out, there'd be a sense of emptiness inside. Yeah. Even though I spent the majority of my life without a baby inside of me. So.
Well, I've spent the majority of my life with about 750 million inside of me.
Somehow I don't think that's the same thing.
Yeah, the joke we've been making, and by we, I mean me, is that I carried the baby for the first 35 years. And now you're just 7 months, 8 months in. It's like, you know, I've done my part. You should see the look on her face.
I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
So since we were here last, we had Christmas, we had New Year's, we moved house onto the absolute outskirts of Melbourne with the greenery and the snakes and the kangaroos. I sent a video actually to a few people that have been on this podcast, Danielle Dame and Danielle Hamilton, on a walk yesterday with Ollie, and showing that like kangaroos are just like on our normal walk. And they were like, oh my God. They were so amazed because they're in Canada and the US. But I wonder if we can share a bit about like why we moved to a greener part of the world. Even though we're still kind of Melbourne, it's like feels like we're not Melbourne.
Yeah, well, this is wild for me particularly because for those of you that don't know, I was born in Paris. And so I'm a city girl. I love being close to the city. I love being connected to life and culture and art. And so I never imagined that I'd be anywhere further out from the inner city area.
Were you going to say rural? I thought I could tell. I'm like, come on, Eltham is not rural.
No, it's not. And we're still quite connected. But, you know, I always thought I want to be close to where things are happening.
Yeah.
Right? And for that to be really easily accessible. So it's amazing because, you know, I've got friends that live out this way, but I never ever considered that I would want to live out this way. And with having a family, there was a real desire to be somewhere where you know, we're around trees, around nature. Maddie and I both prefer trees to the beach. That's what helps us feel grounded and connected and calm.
You were at the beach yesterday, though.
So yeah. We're not anti-beach. No. It's a balance between everything. But being around trees or the forest is definitely what makes me feel grounded.
Same, my preference for sure.
Yeah. So having that in my life just immediately gives me a sense of peace. And so we wanted cleaner air for both ourselves and our baby. And also because, you know, a lot of my life is going to be in the house for some time. And so I wanted a place where I felt calm and peaceful and would reduce the risk of me going stir crazy and like, I need to get out of here. There's, you know, I'm in a concrete jungle. So there were trees almost at every single window. I mean, apart
so
from this
nice.
One. But
yeah, it's funny because every time I'm on a Zoom call or a podcast and I say, we moved to Eltham because it's so green and we're in this office. By the way, the video that you may or may not be seeing, this is our home. And the only window, for those listening, that you can see out of here is just straight up bricks, red bricks. But I promise it's beautiful and green and there's canopies everywhere.
The irony is that this is the only window that doesn't have a view of trees. Your other window is beautiful. But, you know, from our bedroom, it's just a canopy of trees.
Oh, it's so nice.
Which is amazing. And there's been quite a few times that we wake up and you'll say things like, I feel like we've gone away to a retreat
or an Airbnb.
Yeah. Airbnb.
Feels so nice.
Yeah. So that's just been amazing.
Yeah. Well, partially for me, because I grew up in the countryside and, you know, was used to the greenery, but I always had big visions for my life. And in the sense that I always thought, you know, I wouldn't spend the rest of my life here, rather. And so through my 20s, as I was kind of going through my rebellion and figuring out who I was and all that kind of stuff, I was like, yeah, I'm a city guy. You know, I achieve stuff and I do shit and I'm busy. You know, that was like my identity. But the more that I understand cancer, working at the cancer hospital and all of the diseases and the health and wellness, the more that I've felt a call back to the trees. And especially now that we're making decisions for somebody that's not us. And particularly because that person is about to be 0 years old. So have the immune system of somebody of its age where all of those things are forming and developing, you know, it's a part of my decision making and our decision making to make sure that Caramella, we don't know yet. We really don't know, by the way, that they're able to develop an immune system that has the capacity to go into the city and tackle that stuff rather than grow up, you know, breathing in all of the worst stuff. And sure, like I said, Eltham isn't rural, but, you know, the frequency of trees around here compared to where we were is 1,000 times maybe more in regards to where we were. So, yeah. And I mean, we're also close to markets and there's a sort of a bit more of an open-minded natural health community that might not judge us for some of our absurdly hippie decisions that we might make in the interest of our child's health.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy that we're in the trees.
Oh, no, me too. And the community thing is also really important for us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're very naturally health-minded. And so some of the things that we're doing is not necessarily what more mainstream people might choose.
Yeah, totally. Which, you know, some people judge us for. It's funny, I don't know if I mentioned this on the last podcast, but we've had a lot more exposure to this now, which is whenever you speak to somebody that's had a kid, particularly mums, they're like, your baby, your choice. And they do this really empowering thing. Like, it's you're the mum, do whatever is right for you. You go, girl. And then the second you make the choice, judged. Everybody's like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah. It's a really weird contrast because on one hand, yeah, there's the desire to empower you, but no one judges you as badly as other mums.
Totally.
Right? Or women in general.
Yep.
And it's just crazy to me because I would think we want to come together and either try to understand each other or be a community or listen or just respect that we make different choices. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I didn't get judged so badly for being vegetarian when, you know, someone else might have preferred meat. I mean, it's also less controversial than being vegan.
Yeah.
But just the idea that, mums can be the worst enemies of other mums, not dads, you know, not other men.
Yeah.
But women. And I haven't even had the kid yet. So,
totally.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, my God. What that will entail in, you know, all the conversations about vaccines and insert controversial topics, which will be talked about in future months or years on this podcast, probably. But we also had a big sort of, housewarming / baby shower on the weekend. We had all of our amazing family and friends come around and have all these games and food, and the abundance of food was just insane. That was really beautiful just to see all of our people get together and support us, and arguably thousands of dollars worth of presents and gifts and things to support this little kid. So, yes, so much gratitude to everybody.
Yeah, that was really special. It was a mad dash to get everything organized because I hardly organized anything for the baby shower just because I was trying to organize the house. Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot. But, you know, it really surprised me how many people thought that we knew the gender of the baby.
Yeah, everybody thinks we're hiding this secret.
Yeah. And like you said before, we don't know. But even my nephews, you know, they were like, oh, Auntie Yali, we're going to find out the gender today. You know, what is it? And I'm like, no, this isn't a gender reveal party. This is a baby shower. Yeah. And we're all going to find out what the gender is at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so we did a fun little game. Well, I thought it was fun, where we bought balloons. So pink balloons for a girl, blue balloons for a boy, and we got some helium tanks. And so we got everyone to blow up the color of balloon they thought the gender would be. So blue if you thought it was a boy, pink if it was a girl, and they could all write their names on it. And so we could walk around the room and have a look at who guessed what. And it was so surprising because the amount of people that told us how they thought it was a girl, I ended up buying only one packet of blue balloons because I'm like, obviously everyone's going to pick pink.
Yeah.
And so I'll need two packets of those because we'll have, what, like 5 blue balloons?
Yeah, because it felt like in the last few months, like everybody was, oh, it's a girl, it's a girl, it's a girl.
Even the ones that thought it was a boy at the start jumped ship. And they're like, no, I think it's a girl now. So I'm like, I don't even know if we need these blue balloons. But in the end, it was almost 50-50.
Yeah.
So, and it was really sweet because the next day the balloons came down. So we gathered them all and had a look at the names and who guessed what. And that was really sweet.
Yeah, it was cute. Yeah. It was fun and interactive and we had all sorts of great games.
Yeah.
Maybe we should start after that, the success. Maybe we should start a baby shower organization business.
Oh, yeah, we were great. But also we did it differently. So yes. I think, you know, typical baby showers are, it's all about the women. So it would be me and my friends and my family, mm-hmm. Your family as well. But it's really just a gathering of women.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do something together because I'm like, well, it's our baby. Mm. And you might have people in your life that I'm not particularly close to that also want to celebrate this part of your, you know, our chapter.
Yeah.
And so we did it together and we wanted games that everyone could do together. And so, yeah, I thought it went really well. And, oh, my gosh, your parents just, because, you know, we were grateful and so blessed to have people help and come together and contribute and make things so that we could actually pull all of it together. But your family just above and beyond.
Yeah, like we've joked about a few times, you could be mistaken for this being my sister's surrogate baby or somebody that my mum's adopted. But, well, I guess in a way they've adopted you, right? But, yeah, no, that's so beautiful. And the amount of familial healing that has happened for me and my family without a word being spoken other than we're having a baby has been massive. Like my relationship with my sister, my relationship with my mum, and I think us as a unit, as well. And, you know, dad as well, everyone's just showing up in a different way and being supportive in a different way. And it just feels like, cause you know, there's this Jordan Peterson idea that you're not an adult until you're responsible for another human life. And it feels like in a sense, like my whole family, you know, which includes you obviously, but we don't have any long-term trauma. My mum and my dad and my sister and all of the stuff that families are full of that needs to be healed, it feels like all of us in a way have leveled up to that, oh, we're responsible for a child, now let's forget about the bullshit that doesn't matter, which doesn't negate the fact that there's been a lot of intentional effort to heal those wounds before now. But it's been really beautiful just to see my sister and my mum show up in a different way and even myself just feel differently about the relationships in my family. And some things have washed away, you know, a little bit, which is, just beautiful. You know, everybody's rallying around this idea that, oh, there's another generation coming. Let's get our shit together. Like, you know, let's forget about or fix the things that needed to be fixed before this next one comes along and is contaminated by our old bullshit, you know? And so, yeah, I really am proud of the people in my immediate family, which is soon going to be just you, me, and Caramello, which is still a weird concept to make sense of.
Because we're a family. Yes. But also I wanted to highlight, you know, it was really beautiful because your mum and your sister have also said something really sweet where your mum said, we want to be the grandparents that you two never got.
Yeah.
And your sister wants to be the auntie that you never had.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really beautiful. And, you know, your parents and your family, they've been so amazing and welcoming. And as lovely as they are, I do feel like the fact that we got pregnant and are having a family, something shifted.
Mm.
And there was an immediate shift of, oh, we're all family.
Yeah.
We're all family. I'm not just your partner.
Yeah.
Which is really beautiful to be a part of and to experience. And, you know, just the generosity with which they showed up,
mm-hmm.
and the gifts which above and beyond, and all of the food that they cooked.
Yeah,
and
we need more storage.
Oh my gosh, we actually need a new house. Yes. We need another house with storage. But it was just really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we've spoken about this for me and how that's as grateful as I am to be able to be a part of this and receive this. It's also a little bittersweet because my family dynamics are a little bit different.
Yeah, a bit more challenging.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm grateful because I've got my brother and my sister. We're relatively close. And
yeah, they're great.
You know, and they're great support networks as well. But, you know, my relationship with my mum is a little different. Mm. And it's also a Sri Lankan culture where, you know, when you grow up as the child, you take care of your parents.
Yeah.
It's not the parents take care of you. Whereas I see how your parents check in and ask, and they remember things that are going on in your life, and they'll follow up, and
yeah.
they want to rally around and support, you know, support you, support Megan. And it's, oh, wow, this is beautiful. And also, oh, I don't know what that feels like.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's been a really interesting experience for me. And not to take away at all with how incredible your parents have been and how beautiful it is the way that your family has shown up. But it's been a really interesting point of reflection for me. And I think that also helps us think about what kind of parents we want to be and how
yeah.
we want our family dynamic and how we want to raise our child or children, and, you know, however it all plays out. So it's, yeah, it's been a really emotional process for me, this pregnancy. It's brought up a lot of things. It's also been deeply healing, and poor Maddie has seen me cry so many times.
Well, no, not really.
Like, oh, for me. Yeah. Because I'm pretty emotionally stable.
Yeah, totally. But, and you've even said that a few times, right? You're like, for a pregnant woman, I feel like I've had my shit together pretty well. And yes. you really have. I could probably count on maybe one hand how many times you've cried.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've gone on my own long journey of healing emotions and dealing with my traumas. And so I feel like I'm in a place in my life where I don't have the roller coaster. Even
yeah.
when I was, you know, getting my period, I feel like I'm generally pretty stable and able to feel my emotions and express them and talk about them and process and move on. So I haven't had random things through this pregnancy where I cry because, I don't know, I put the milk in the oven. I don't know, I'm trying to think of something ridiculous, yeah. right? And because I haven't had that level of pregnancy brain either. I had moments where I'm like, oh, what's the word I'm looking for?
And there's definitely pregnancy brain.
No, 100%. I've forgotten so many words. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I saying? And I get my sentences jumbled up. But it hasn't been to the level of, I don't, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
And where am I going? And why have I got odd socks in my hands when I'm trying to water the garden? Right? And equally, I haven't had moments where I just burst into tears or get really angry and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've kind of just been me.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but in saying that, you know, going through the pregnancy, what I wasn't expecting was just how much you could bring up of my own wounds from being a child or family dynamics and things like that. And so I'm grateful because it's also an opportunity to clear it because I don't want to carry it anymore.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, I do feel like I've cried a lot, and you've been amazing and supportive and holding that space for me.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that I think of too is that no matter how kind other people are, our attachments are what they are. We are, of course, attached to our mothers. As a woman, who's about to give birth to a child, you are the child of your mother, right? And so nobody else could fill those shoes. It doesn't matter how kind my family is or generous, they are still not your mother, you know, yeah, or your father or anything, any of those roles. And so that, I think there's probably a lot of people that can relate to that bittersweet sense of like, oh, I feel kind of guilty for not, you know, relishing in this generosity of other people, but I really wish it came from the right person for me. And so, which is, you know, that's so hard to process because it's like, oh, it's so kind and loving over here, but I want this person to be doing some of that.
Yeah, which for me was weird to even comprehend because I felt like I had made peace with the dynamics with my mum.
Yeah.
And so it was, oh, you know, I'm fine. I'm independent. I can take care of myself. I don't need that. And so just having moments where, oh, there isn't that love and tenderness and care, even just for the smaller things.
Yeah.
And so I didn't realize I would miss or be sad to not receive some of those elements. And so, yeah, that was a really interesting process to go through and you can't bypass it. I had to acknowledge it. I had to sit in it and process it and accept it. And, you know, it doesn't always go away overnight.
Totally,
so it's like, okay, you know, I can accept it as much as I can in this moment. If it comes up again, then it comes up again.
Yeah. You mentioned two things in that. Watch this for a segue. you mentioned in the garden, watering the plants or, you know, with the hose. And you also mentioned something in there about sort of being lost with odd socks and being confused. But what that reminded me is one, today when I was in the backyard, a pipe burst. And so we need to fix that. But that's my segue into waters breaking. Because I witnessed waters break today that weren't Yali's. And
where?
We'll figure that out. I'll show you. Anyway, but the point is we have decided to have a home birth. Speaking of waters breaking.
Wow, that is a segue. Oh my God. Can you tell he's a podcast host? Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and so many people, friends, intelligent friends, scientific friends, people have expressed concerns / delivered judgment about our decision to have a home birth. And
Which all comes from love because they want the
concerned.
Best outcomes.
Yeah, yeah, they don't want us to make poor decisions that put anybody at risk. But why did we want to do a home birth? You first.
Thanks. Well, it was never something that we came in with the intention or expectation of doing.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't grow up thinking, oh, this is, you know, home birth. That sounds amazing. I was definitely more part of the mainstream society where I just expected that if I ever had a baby, it would be in a hospital setting.
Also, the first stake you had worked way too quickly. So we got to these decisions much faster than we expected.
Yeah, instead of replenishing my iron supply, I was like, oh, great, we've got a bit of iron. Let's get pregnant now. hey, this baby chose to come in. For whatever reason, that was the timing. I don't think either one of us came in with, hey, this is what I want to do.
No.
It was, I don't know, we somehow started doing some research and I think we had appointments with alternative health practitioners or a naturopath.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the first one? And I think maybe that was where it came into conversation around, oh, what kind of birthing are you going to have in hospital, home birth, this, that, and the other? And it was, what is the home birth option?
Yeah, at that stage, it was mostly Yali's trying to not die every day of starvation and vomiting. You know, it was like, oh, we're going to figure out other stuff. You know, so when we were first asked that, we were a bit like, no idea.
Yeah, and that's not the priority right now.
Yes.
Right now is just keeping both of us alive.
Yeah.
And so then, somehow the idea came into my mind, whether it was through that consultation or somewhere else, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But then we started to look into it because we're curious people and we like to do our research. And it turns out that actually a lot of hospitals provide this service. So
yeah.
I think Sunshine Hospital was one of the first hospitals to provide a home birth program because there was so much demand for it. And that's gone so well that a lot of the other major hospitals like Royal Women's Hospital, Mercy Hospital, I think Mercy Hospital, there's quite a few hospitals that are now creating their own home birthing program because there's a real demand for it. And what was really interesting is when we inquired with Sunshine Hospital, they actually gave us statistics on the birthing outcomes. And it turns out that with a home birth, there were actually better outcomes for the mum and the baby and less risk of intervention. Now, in terms of doing a home birth, I'm not talking about free birthing.
Yes.
Free birthing yes. being where it would just be Maddie and I at home by ourselves and
that's
hey, let's just hope that everything goes okay.
Yeah.
And then rely on calling the ambulance if something goes wrong.
That's not what we're doing.
No, no.
We're not doing a free birth. And no. We're also not judging people that do it because the midwives that we are currently working with are surrounded by people and or have free birthed themselves, you know. So
yeah.
Not judging that, but understand why people would judge that.
Yeah. And yeah. Also a lot of the people they know that have home birthed were midwives themselves.
Correct.
So
yeah,
they
more,
knew what to yeah. look out for.
More qualified.
Or it was, you know, that had multiple births and therefore they knew the process and their babies just pop out.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, if that's what someone chooses, that's what someone chooses.
Yeah, totally.
But you and I, that's not what we wanted because yeah. we wanted to make sure we had all the right protocols and safety mechanisms in place. So we wanted a home birth, which means two midwives come to your home. And if it's through the hospital system, they're midwives from the hospital that have been monitoring you through the process. They'll come to your home when you're deep in labor and they have a bunch of criteria for which it continues to be safe to home birth. And if any of those criteria aren't met, then the agreement is that you have to be transferred into the hospital system.
Yeah.
And so you have to have ambulance cover and a whole bunch of things to make
yeah.
sure that, and you have to be a certain distance from the hospital so that they can ensure that if anything goes wrong, that you can get into the hospital, they can have the theater prepped and ready for you by the time that you get there. And and so you can either go through the hospital system, which we couldn't get because it's so popular and there's such yeah. a big wait list that we didn't make it on the register. And so we chose to go privately, which is a very expensive
yes.
path to go down. It is not cheap at all. It'd be much, much cheaper to go to hospital. But that's the option that felt right for us and
yeah.
what felt good for me. And even just having had the contrast of an experience with the hospital system versus these private midwives, I mean, the experience couldn't be more different,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
So with the hospital system, every time I had a midwife appointment, I felt like cattle going in and it's just, okay, right, yep, no, sit on the bed. Nope, don't lie down. Yes, we're going to take your blood pressure. No, now lie down. Yep, we're going to check this. Get on the seat. And then they'll just sit there staring at their screen, ticking boxes, marking things, writing some notes. And I'm kind of like, oh, you know, do I speak? Do I say anything?
Do I need to be here for this?
Yeah. Do we leave? Is this over? And then at the very end, it's, okay, do you have any questions? And it's, oh. Am I allowed to ask questions? It's really the experience of being spoken to.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm just being told what to do. I'm being told what to expect. I'm being told what their processes are. Whereas with the private midwives that we've gone with, oh my gosh, it's through this entire journey, it's one of the very few times that I felt like I was treated like a human being. You know, I spoke on the last podcast about how even with the GP, who well-meaning yeah. and lovely as she is, there was no human emotional aspect on how I'm going or my experience until I broke down in tears in
yeah.
one of our visits because it was just the whole, everything was just too much for me.
Which is wild, was wild to me. I don't know if I mentioned this on that podcast, but one, she was a woman, and two, she was Sri Lankan. So the like you would think that there'd be some level of likeness and empathy for, I don't know.
I think with the medical system, everyone is time pressured.
Yes, they're right? victim to the system that they're
yeah.
working in.
So it's
in.
Like you've
yeah.
got 5-10 minutes with them, you've just got to charge through. And with private midwives, you actually are paying for their time.
Yeah, very different.
And so there's, and even with the naturopath, right? So they,
yes.
they have the space to give better duty of care
yeah.
and be present with you. And so, you know, because with the GP, when I was saying how sick I was, mm-hmm. I got judged. It's like, yeah. Oh, still? As though there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And it's, no, this isn't normal.
Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar, and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too, which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there. Well, I remember to a particular moment when we were there when you broke down in tears. There was also a reaction from her where she was just like, oh, do you need a psychologist? Like, you know, it was so pathologizing of just like, oh, tears equal sadness equals need psychological help. Psychologists do that. Like, it was just this, diagnosed, you know?
Yeah.
I remember being like, are you human?
Yeah. It's, you know, the victim to the system. I mean, who knows about personalities?
Yeah,
but
for sure.
It's definitely.
That's a lot of people to care about too. That's the other thing I'll say, having worked in hospitals, not that I had a patient load myself, but my colleagues it's a lot of emotion to carry. When you actually care about half of your patients, it's a lot. So, you know, I also recognize, like we've acknowledged, that they're, you know, that's the system they work in, and they've got a way in which they can survive their own job, which is like, I can't get emotionally invested in all these people because half of them won't do what they're meant to anyway.
Yeah.
The other half might die. So I can't carry that.
Which is extreme when you're talking about a medical setting, right? Because all you're experiencing day in and day out with people are people that are sick, people that are struggling emotionally, physically, mentally. And so, that burden would be huge.
Sure.
The challenge then is when you're the patient looking for help, you don't necessarily feel supported.
Mm-hmm.
And then you become another victim to the system, right? It's the same reason that we've been fighting for an iron infusion for almost, 7 months. Finally got it. But it had to get to critical, critical levels where it was people being seriously concerned with my ability to give birth because I would need a blood transfusion immediately there sitting, waiting, ready. And even then, you know, we wouldn't make stupid decisions. So with the home birthing, you know, the private midwives were like, okay, well, with your iron levels where they are, unless you get an iron infusion, we can't do home birthing. It's too dangerous. It's too risky. So there is still a number of criteria that you have to meet. And we went through this the other day around talking about risks, talking about different circumstances and what we might need to be prepared for and the readiness to be able to go into hospital. So we actually are in the process of creating 3 different birth plans. One for our ideal scenario of birthing at home, one for if we do need to go into the hospital so that I'm mentally prepared for that and not just sitting there feeling really overwhelmed, and 3 in case there does need to be an emergency C-section. So we're covering all of our bases and just hoping for the birth that, you know, we would most desire.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to go back to that, I guess the starting point of this part of the conversation with why we chose home birth. I know that I often have this running joke that I thought all my partners in the future would have to be naturopaths or nutritionists because I was like, oh, you know, health is so important to me. Understanding the level of corruption in the health system is important. And, you know, I mean, there's over 400 episodes kind of about that, but so I don't need to go into it now. But the point is that I've always, like, it was wasn't necessarily in my conscious thought because we were beginning a process of getting healthy to create a baby, not, you know, steak equals baby now. And so I hadn't thought much about it, but the second it came up, I was like, oh, I want to do a home birth. And that's because I understand enough about, you know, how hospitals work and, you know, have had chapters of my life where I've been exposed to neonatal care and sort of midwifery and stuff like that for a significant portion of my life, to the point that I really understood, you know, how many things are not ideal in that hospital setting, which is exactly why I left my job, right? Because so much of it is not ideal. And I understand, as we've acknowledged, there's system limitations, there's personnel limitations, there's funding limitations, but
insurance limitations.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, we found out about that one yesterday. But it's also a system that's been, sadly, hospitals are businesses that are designed to make money, and nobody yet, maybe RFK will be the beginning of changing this, until governments see developing healthy humans as a profitable thing to go after, where, you know, you have to be informed. And so I was so happy, you know, even when we initially met, to find out how many things we're on the same page about and that you were open to doing all of this stuff, because I always thought the greatest war of my life would be if I don't have a baby with somebody that, you know, like, is on the same page health-wise. And so, you know, there's just the statistics that, to me, are overwhelmingly beneficial to do them at home. And so, yeah, obviously, like you said, we're going to go to the hospital if we need it. It's like 6.8 kilometers away. Like, we're going to be fine. We're not hippies. We're not idiots. The irony is, the people you think are hippies have probably done more research than you. That's why they've made these outlandish decisions. So,
I mean, we've had appointments with midwives like Rhea Dempsey. Yeah. Who's known around the world.
Yeah. People, right? Like, we've people are shocked that we got a one-on-one with her.
Yeah, but we've gone to real experts before making this decision. And what's interesting is, the moment you do your research, the moment you speak to experts, the information and advice that you get is so different to what you see in the mainstream. And so we've done a lot of research and spoken to a lot of experts before we were like, yep, before we felt truly comfortable and confident. And so anyway, you and I, suffice to say, we go down a lot of rabbit holes, but those rabbit holes comes with an incredible amount of research.
Yeah, and difficult decisions too, because even though sometimes it's obvious, once you look at the numbers and the data and the thousands of anecdotes about all sorts of health topics, there's still this part of me that I'm like, oh, I'm a scientist. I worked in hospitals. I was raised by a nurse. And there's still always this voice in the back of my head that's like, are you being an idiot? Are you being naive? Is your ego attached to this story? Mm-hmm. You know, but I think it's kind of like, this, I think, I don't know if I said this the other day or was on, this is take two of this podcast, by the way. But, you know, it's like when I first went to a therapist when I was like 22 or 23, and she was like, why are you here? And I said, I think I'm a narcissist. And she was instantly like, well, you're not a narcissist, because no narcissist would walk in here and say that, because they don't have the self-awareness to realize that they are that. And so I'm hopeful that that voice in the back of my head that's checking in and being like, is this stupid? Are you being an idiot? You know, is this your ego attached to your natural health narrative? I'm hopeful that it's the same scenario there, right? that little voice keeps me real and reminds me science has utility, hospitals have utility, which I'm, you know, I know. I worked in them and a big advocate for medicine and all the things. And there's been times.
Oh, well, we've used the medical system, exactly. Right? I was going in for weekly IVs. I was in there for an iron infusion. We're not against it. It's incredible and amazing.
Absolutely.
And it should be part of your support network if you need those resources.
Yeah. You go.
No. You finish first.
Well, I was just about to say, if anybody takes anything away from this part of the conversation, I think the easiest, the most simple message to leave with for this part of what we're talking about is that hospitals make pregnancy a medical procedure. And pregnancy and birth, sorry, giving birth and pregnancy are not medical conditions, nor are they medical procedures. They are as natural as the trees are outside and in the dirt. Like, women have been doing this since the first human, whenever that was, you know, depending on your belief system. It's not a condition being pregnant, and it's not a procedure to go into a hospital and have a baby. That's a completely natural physiological thing, like sleeping and waking up, like going to the toilet and, you know, it's meant to happen rather than it be a condition. And that's I think that's what medicine has done a good job at doing, is that you've got a condition which is called pregnancy, and you're going to have a procedure, or, you know, going to go through this process, this medicalized process called childbirth, which was interesting because the first question that Rhea Dempsey asked us when we sat down with her was, and she even said, she goes, I can't believe I have to say this. So what you want to do is have a natural physiological birth. And we said, yes. And she goes, good, because hospitals don't do that.
Yeah, I forgot about that conversation. Yeah, because a lot of doctors, midwives in hospitals have never even seen a natural physiological birth. And so they don't even know what the process is. They only know what they've been trained in, which is management and control, and telling women what to do, when to push. So women have no connection or empowerment within their body.
Yeah.
And so, oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm just caught up in the whole, the fact that a natural physiological birth is not something that's even understood by the medical system. Now, that's not to say, I mean, yes, it is a natural physiological process in the sense that our bodies are designed to do this. Mm-hmm. And yet sometimes there were complications, and when there are things that just don't go the way that, you know, biology would necessarily be wanting, always right for survival. And so you do need interventions. And it's great to have people that are trained in that. But the fact that people in hospitals, a significant portion of them, don't actually know what a natural birth looks like, natural physiological, is alarming to me, because that means all they know is intervention.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, which drug choices push you to the next stage of birth, you know? Yeah. It's and maybe the picture that we've got isn't entirely accurate, and there's maybe a lot of midwives saying, we know what that looks like. And I do know that, you know, that hospitals are slowly changing, you know, they're bringing in, obviously, I mean, Sunshine Hospital's had the home birth program for almost 10 years. And so I think things are changing or moving in the right direction, probably because there's heaps of podcasts and the dissemination of, you know, natural health information over the last 5 to 10 years has been prolific, which is, you know, and obviously what happened in 2020 and 2021 woke up a lot of people to be like, oh, hospitals and healthcare wasn't exactly what I thought it was. I wonder if that's true in every area of health. And guess what? Yes, it is. You're welcome.
Yeah, I didn't know the aspect of hospitals being like a business and that you're allocated a number of hours when you go into labor. And anyway, we've looked at the cascade of intervention. We've looked at a lot of different things, which, you know, sometimes it's frustrating. It's frustrating doing research. Sometimes I wish I didn't know these
things. Oh my God.
Because like you said before, that little voice in the back of your head, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that makes us question, do we go down this path or not? And the only way that we come to a decision is by doing more research. Yeah. And when we do more research, we go, okay, even though if this is a little bit scary, the alternative, the mainstream alternative, is far scarier.
Yeah.
And so this is the path that we want to go down.
Totally. I think about it, which maybe sounds like a bit of a gruesome image, but it's whether you wear a seatbelt or you don't, that isn't the problem. The crash is the problem, right? And so it's like, of course there are risks on both sides. There's pros and cons, and it reminds me of, and I think I said this to you last night, it reminds me of alternative cancer treatment, of which I've been exposed to a lot and been a part of many people's journey to choose to go down alternative paths. But the idea that if you choose to have a baby in the hospital and something goes wrong, everyone just gives you sympathy. Like, you poor thing, oh my God, that's dreadful. But if you choose to have a home birth and something went wrong, they'd be like, you fucking idiot, you stupid hippie, you know? And it's the same, I've seen the exact same thing happen with cancer therapy. Choose the chemotherapy, which you know is devastatingly toxic, sometimes accidentally helpful. And people are like, oh, really sad, you know? And then somebody goes and finds an alternative, whatever, still dies, you know? But they're a fucking idiot because they chose the natural side of things. So,
basically, you're going to get judged either way.
Yeah.
So you might as well make the decision that you're happy with, because you might die with that decision.
Okay, Maddie's stepping down from soapbox. So what are your fears about what's coming? What are you scared about? What are you worried about? What's popping up in your thoughts?
My more immediate fear, and we've spoken about this before, is just the process of giving birth, right?
Fair because enough.
Of stepping into the unknown. I've had moments where I've really, really panicked about it and I don't know what to expect. I don't know if I can handle this. I don't know how it's going to go. And I've been doing a lot of hypnobirthing. I mean, my background is hypnosis. So of course I'm doing hypnobirthing. And that's really, really been so helpful to me in feeling calmer, more confident, even with the pain and being, having a sense within me that I can embrace that. Mm-hmm. I am under no delusion that it might be challenging, that it might be painful, that it might be hard, but feeling more prepared already for it. But any fragments of fear that are still there in that space is just the unknown because, you know, you can prepare as much as you want, but you'll never know what that journey is going to look like for you. So, and all you can take with you is just courage and hope and just faith that you'll move through it and you'll meet the version of you that you need to become in that process to give birth. So that would be my more immediate fear.
That's very reasonable.
I'm working on.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a bowel movement that will compare to what you're about to go through.
Yeah, I appreciate the empathy there, Maddie. No, is the short answer.
Yeah.
What is your biggest fear?
I feel like it changes every day.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm worried about, and I guess this is, you know, a lot of our listeners will probably be like, oh, welcome to parenthood. Mm. Worry about something new every single day.
Oh, we talked about that because when we got pregnant, I was so sick, we were worried about whether or not this baby would survive and if it would be healthy and viable. And then I went, oh my gosh. And then once it's born, we'll be worried about
everything.
And then does the worry ever end, you know, because then it's, do you want to make sure that they're safe as toddlers when they're running around and touching hot stoves? And
yeah,
wow, that's a part of my fear, that
the never ending worry.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, sorry. back to you.
No, I fully resonate with that as well. As somebody that, well, I'm a researcher. We both go down rabbit holes. So we're data collectors, and so every little step of the way, I can see us being like, we'll be back. Like, ask us a question. Yeah, we'll be back next week. We'll be experts by next week in this topic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think learning to be at peace with the worry of the world and is definitely a part of that. I think I fear being too controlling as a parent, as someone that might control the kid or want it to do really well and be well and yeah, that's definitely a concern I'm worried about because, yeah, I do like things to be a certain way and it's all from a good place, you know, of wanting things to be the best they can be or the best possible version of something. So, yeah, I guess I worry that I'm going to be a controlling parent and then grow up with a kid that resents its father. It's like, fuck you, you controlled me. I'm going to, I don't know, throw rocks at you or do something terrible or make decisions that you're not proud of, whatever.
In spite of you.
Yeah. So I guess I worry about that, but I'm hopeful that, again, that awareness is there in a capacity that means that I'm able to check on it and rely on you to be like, Maddie, calm your farm. You can't control everything.
There were only two.
Yes. Yeah, they haven't graduated from uni yet, Maddie, because they're four.
I think you'll be okay. And also, what you mentioned is you have a level of self-awareness, right? And also we've had, you know, some people know there's been a lot of challenges through this relationship with the challenges that came with this pregnancy.
Yeah.
But I think the great thing with us is despite the challenges and however hard the conversations might be, we're both very honest.
Sometimes too honest.
We're both very honest and we both say the hard things, which means we put it all on the table and then we own up to it, we acknowledge it, and then we look to find a solution.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether that's hard for you, whether that's hard for me, it also requires us to grow and the willingness to grow and the willingness to work on our stuff, which is not going to end with this baby. I think, is the saving grace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a wild ride. And I think, as you said before, in regards to birthing, you know, you'll meet the person that you need to be whence that moment arrives, you know. And so I hope the same thing, I guess every parent hopes for that, that they, whenever, whatever situation presents itself, that you're able to, you know, meet the situation or the challenge head on with your best self, which obviously we won't always be our best selves because we'll be sleep deprived and money worried and all of the things that parents are, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're under no illusion that we're going to make a lot of mistakes, that we're going to get things wrong, that it's going to bring out the worst parts of us at times.
And project our own shit onto them and be pissed off because they're doing the things that we hate about ourselves.
Oh, my God, you've been so triggered. But that's okay. We're not looking for perfection.
Yeah.
I'm not holding myself to a perfect standard. I expect that I'm going to make mistakes. I expect that I'm going to have moments I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't respond like that. But, you know, I think what's more important is being able to regroup and then do better. And, you know, when they're older, being able to actually apologize and say, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I was just, I didn't have patience or whatever it is, and just going, you know, I shouldn't have responded that way and I'm really sorry, and trying to make amends.
Yeah, totally.
Because I have no problems admitting when I'm wrong.
The other thing that maybe we'll dive into on another podcast in more depth, but it's going to make a lot of people who have been parents before laugh, is that we're planning to do a thing called elimination communication, which is basically toilet training your kid from birth. Like literally day one, and there's heaps of books on it, and a lot of parents, when we sort of announced this at the or talked about it at the baby shower, you know, a few of the people in the room that have had kids were kind of like, oh yeah, righto, good luck with that.
Yeah.
But the people we know that are doing it are having great success, and the books that have been written on doing it, because women that had babies tied to them walking across, you know, the savannah and in tribes and communities, and you know, you've referenced Sri Lankan and Indian culture. Mm-hmm. Those women aren't covered in shit.
The
babies are naked, and they're not soiling these women all of the time. Sure, accidents happen. So the idea is that elimination communication, which I've been listening to the audiobooks and getting like right into, because it's basically an investment in our future financially, because we've seen the numbers, and you can save thousands and thousands of dollars on nappies. I mean, we're doing cloth nappies anyway, but we can get them in some of the books 4 months. Like, you can get them toilet trained in 4 months. On average, it seems to be about 12 months, 9 to 12 months.
Up to 18 months is generally like the upper end.
Totally.
But also, it sounds very scientific, elimination communication. It's actually the most natural way of raising and training a baby, because originally before nappies, and there were cloth nappies, but it was, you listened to your baby's cues. And what we didn't realize is that they're born with a sphincter reflex, and they're born communicating to you before they soil themselves. Because, you know, similar to dogs, where if you've ever had a dog and you've had to, you know, train them to go to the toilet, they don't want to relieve themselves in their space. So if you crate train them, they don't want to go to the toilet in the crate. So they'll cry to let you know they need to go to the toilet, and then you've got to take them outside.
Yeah.
Similarly, babies, sorry, you probably don't want to have this full conversation here.
It's so fun.
But they'll give you cues when they need to go to the toilet, because they don't want to soil themselves. But the thing is, if we train them to stay in the diaper, they actually stop giving you those cues, because they go, oh, well, there's no point.
Yeah.
But the more you tune in and you realize what your baby's cues are, whether they're scrunching their hands, whether they're scrunching their face or giving a grunt, they'll start to give you more of those cues, so you can actually catch it. And, you know, some of your friends gave birth recently and they never heard about it. We introduced the topic, and, you know, the dad's catching like 90% of the peas over the sink.
That's 12 weeks, 3 months?
It was 10 weeks. I think they were really catching the majority of them. And, you know, they'd still put a nappy on, but the majority of the times the nappy was dry because they were able to catch it all. So it's really about building a relationship with your child so you can understand what it is they're trying to tell you. Similar to when they're crying, you know, lots of mums will then understand what the different cries mean. Similarly, they have different gestures for the toilet.
Yeah. And it's just, from my understanding, spending a lot of time with your bub and, you know, understanding how it communicates, what it does, and developing a language between the two, mum and or parents and child, so that you can start cueing them. Because they, once you start coming to an unconscious agreement as to which sounds mean certain things, you basically narrate them, you know, through their toilet experiences, and they start learning, even though they are, you know, are miles away from having full blown conversations. You start, they start being like, oh, okay, now I know what that means in regards to my toilet experiences.
Yeah, well, it's similar to how a lot of parents are now using sign language to communicate with their kids before they actually are able to verbally communicate. And so it's like, you know, signs for more food, or hungry, or thirsty. Because once they learn to create the association, they'll tell you. And so anyway, listen, this is the idea. Cloth nappies, elimination communication. Some people think we're crazy. Some people think that, oh, you say that now, but you just wait until this baby's here. So
fast forward 6 months, Maddie and Yali do a podcast. We've invested in Huggies. And we're like, we haven't caught any shits at all.
It depends on, you know, how exhausted we are. I mean, we're aware there are so many factors.
So many factors. But we're going to try is the point.
That's the idea. We're going to try. That's our hope.
Yeah. So, yeah, we wanted to do this to update everybody, just bring you in on our conversations and world and what's going on right now, because we've had so many generous and kind people reach out with concern and just want an update, and podcast listeners and clients and friends and family. And it's the support has been so beautiful, and, you know, just it's so lovely to see that so many people are invested and care. So, you know, I just want to send out some thanks and some gratitude and appreciation for your care for our little family that's growing.
Yeah, it's been really sweet, and it's been really meaningful. So thank you so much. And again, I am well. The baby is growing. I can show you the bump.
Oh, which, yeah.
Because last time we did this video, you couldn't actually.
There we go. That's 8 months.
almost full term.
I know.
But you couldn't actually tell that I was pregnant. So I worked hard on this belly, and I probably had the opposite experience of, you know, I didn't want to know what my weight was, because I didn't want to get in my head about it. And I'm like, you know, as long as I'm getting bigger, as long as this belly is getting bigger, it's good. And so ironically, Maddie's going to weigh me just before I give birth, so we actually know what my weight is.
Yeah, we've got some data for future pregnancies.
Yeah, because I have zero desire to get in my head about it, because if I know that I've gained a certain number, one, the biggest I've ever been, I don't want that to impact the way that I'm eating and taking care of this baby. So, I mean, I know from my clothes that things are different. And we've had a few laughs, and I've tried to squeeze into something, and your response was very politically correct. You just, instead of going, oh yeah, that doesn't, you know, you don't fit into that, you'd be like, just looks a little uncomfortable. But yeah, probably had the opposite issue to a lot of women, where I don't want to know my weight, you know, and I'm not someone that's excessive in eating, you know, 20 quarter pounders a day.
No.
But it's just, I don't want to know. I trust that my body will, you know, go back to whatever it's meant to be after this baby. But in the meantime, I just want to make sure I'm eating. I'm relieved that I'm eating. And just, you know, if anything, I'm like, I need to eat more. I need to have a timer on every hour. I need to get more food into me. Do you think my belly's growing? Am I getting bigger? So, yeah, that's been my checklist.
Yeah, I think you're very much in good company of people that don't want to see the number on the scales. Like, that's literally why we say we don't count calories. We don't get people to stand on scales, you know. So, there's a lot of people that feel emotionally affected by that number, irrelevant of their state of health or life situation, you know. So. And the other thing that I just wanted to say, since we've just, for anybody who's not on the video, Yali just showed us on YouTube her belly, is that I'm very proud that we've gotten Yali onto using beef tallow to nurture her belly, which is going to prevent stretch marks and just, you know, look after the skin that's undergoing so much transformation right now.
Which, oh my gosh, because I'm always into natural products, and I tend to use coconut oil for my face and my body.
And I love this.
Like, you really should try beef tallow. This thing is amazing. And meanwhile, in truth though, I did not like the smell. I thought it was so bad. And even when you cook with it, like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah, this is why the joke evolved that when I, because I use beef tallow on my face a lot, the steak face.
Yeah, but he'd come to bed and I'm like, you've got tallow on your face, don't you? He's like, I'm just trying to look young.
Yes, I don't want wrinkles. I want to look youthful.
But the compromise has been that we found some incredible whipped tallow that's mixed with essential oils that smell divine. Mm-hmm. And in truth, I have never felt my skin feel so deeply moisturized with all the natural things that I do. And people comment on how soft my skin is.
Yeah.
With it. This is next level. So yeah, it's been incredible. It's definitely been better than anything else you could buy and also cheaper, I think, than a lot of products out there.
Yeah, but I feel like the health trend is kicking off. Like, you know, anyone that's in the health space has probably known about it for years, and social media is just in the last year or two really kicking off. Yeah. So we should stockpile it before it triples in price.
You should get an association and have a link to give people a discount.
Yeah, I really should do that.
Because, yeah. it's incredible. And there's a lot of different brands out there, and you've got to be wary of which essential oils are in there, because anything with citrus in there, you don't want to go out in the sunlight because UV and sunburn. But yeah, thank you.
No,
I'm embracing the beef tallow era with it being whipped and full of essential oils. That definitely appeals to my senses.
And I guess a lot of people know where I am on social media, and we've just, for those that don't know, we're now the Real Weight Loss Coach on Instagram. So I'm appearing back there after 4 or 5 year hiatus from Instagram. But if you're thinking, Yali is so awesome and I want to see more of Yali, where can everybody find you on the internet?
Well, fortunately, I've got a short name that rolls off the tongue.
Uh-oh. Get your notepad out.
So it's Yalini _ Nirmalaraja. Maybe we'll put that in the show notes I don't expect anyone to remember that. But yes, so that's how people can connect with me on social media, and I'll share photos and updates as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, see more of our story.
Yeah, amazing. And it feels weird to end this without asking this question, but what is one piece of health information you wish more people knew about?
One piece of health information that I wish more people knew about?
Yeah.
I'm going to say this is going to be around pregnancy, because that's been a big part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know if it's health advice,
mm-hmm.
but what I wish more women, more people knew is that pregnancy and birthing in particular can be a really empowering process.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you get that message in the mainstream medical system. I think, especially with everything we're exposed to in Hollywood and what we see in shows and movies, it's scary. You know, the water breaks, panic, get rushed to the hospital. Women are screaming. They're in excruciating pain. Mm-hmm. It's traumatic. And what I've learned through this process, which I never imagined, because I never knew there was an alternative, is that, Ollie's like, I've had enough. is that it can actually be empowering, that you can feel connected to a source of power within you that you never knew existed. And with all of the case studies that I've looked at, there have been so many women that have said, after birth, there was such a level of certainty within themselves that there is nothing I can't do. And so through the research and through the things that we've read and seen and people we've spoken to, it feels like this incredible rite of passage that can feel exciting and can feel amazing and can be so much more than what I ever imagined it to be. So that's one thing I wish more people knew, that birthing, pregnancy can be an incredible experience, not just fear-mongering.
Yeah, totally. Amazing. Well, there'll be more updates. There'll be more podcasts with Yali and or Caramello at some point.
And or Ollie.
And or Ollie. So yeah, I guess we're not far out from the big day, whichever day that ends up being. So stay tuned, basically. Life's about to get wild.
Yeah, we're definitely at the... Oh, there goes the baby. We're definitely nearing the end of this experience. We're just weeks out at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, next time you see me, there's likely going to be a little Caramello or Caramella in the picture.
Totally. All right, well, for now, that's us, but we'll catch you on the next episode. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is. Loving what you're hearing? Make sure you're subscribed here on your favorite podcast app. Or there's even more waiting for you over on YouTube. On our channel, you'll get to see our fascinating guests demonstrate their techniques in real time. You'll see my animated explanation of complex health concepts made simple, plus all of those you had to be there moments that we mentioned in the show. The Coaching with Maddie episodes will be there too. We're also creating exclusive YouTube shorts. Quick, powerful health tips you won't find anywhere else. And let's face it, if we're going to be doom scrolling, which we all do from time to time, you might as well make it worthwhile. Just search How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast on YouTube and hit subscribe to unlock the visual side of becoming a healthy friend of the show. Because sometimes you need to see it to believe it, and also to achieve it. The direct link is in the show notes below. Come and join our YouTube community.